Okay, so we're going to fast forward because we could spend all day getting to know each other, but we're here for a very particular reason. And we're going to talk about your book and we're going to talk about the future and all that type of stuff in a few moments. But you had a near fatal car accident, and clearly it wasn't fatal, but your leg was crushed, your right leg was crushed, and it puts you in a wheelchair. And will you tell us what happened? Tell us about the accident first, if you don't mind.
So 2002 it was, driving on the outskirts of Sheffield where I live, rainy day, car skidded, nobody else on the road, I wasn't speeding, it was just a bad accident, aquaplaned, crashed into a pole, car bent in half, stuck, and everybody came to save me, police, ambulance, paramedics, fire brigade, took them about an hour and a half to cut the car apart piece by piece, eventually reaching in, dragging me out along with what was left of my legs, mercy dashed me to the nearest hospital. And they told me, no, they're going to do their best. They may have to amputate my right leg. Both of them were damaged. And, they took me off into the operating theatre to save my legs. But to be honest, I found out later they lied to me that day because it wasn't just my legs that they were trying to save. It was my life.
Hello there, and welcome to another Coffee with Colin, a very special Coffee with Colin, and thank you for being here. Today I'm delighted to be having to chat over coffee with Stephen Judge, known as Steve Judge, I understand, to his friends. And let me just tell you a little bit about Steve, if I may, before we bring him on for a chat. He's a professional speaker, author, and resilience coach. His mission is to deliver his story that took him from, will you hear this, from wheelchair to world champion and beyond. And in this Coffee with Colin, we're going to explore what all that means, where he came from, what happened, clearly, and how he has gone from literally from wheelchair to being world champion on two occasions, I understand. He encourages his audience to go confidently in the direction of their dreams, or as he says himself, their goal, GOLD. And we will figure out what GOLD stands for in the course of this conversation. He's passionate about everyone experiencing the happiness and fulfillment of achieving the life that they have imagined and truly deserve. Great introduction. Stephen, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here. I do apologize that I kind of messed it up a little. I've got water rather than coffee. I've had my tea and my coffee. I'm now onto water. But still, we'll still have a chat over your coffee and my water. How's that?
I think that sounds absolutely wonderful. And I've had several coffees today, but that's what I do. Coffee is my thing. We're lovely to have you here and really interested to hear your story and to find out, what's happening in your world and where you're headed and all that great stuff. Would you oblige to just take us all the way back? Where was Steve Judge? But am I right in saying Steve as opposed to Stephen? Are we okay with that?
You're a friend of mine. You can call me Steve. Yeah, I'm generally known as Steve. I haven't been called Stephen for a while now. I think I just prefer Steve. It's a bit more casual, likable. And I think as a motivational speaker, it's always about thinking about how to be more approachable and less strict. More so, yeah. Steve is fine. Go for that.
Cool. Okay. Well, Steve, great to have you here, as I said, and thanks for having coffee with Colm. Take us all the way back, little Steve Judge, young Steve Judge, where and when, and all that start. What was school like for you?
Do you know what? The first memory that comes to me was running. I loved running as a kid. I would run everywhere and anywhere. I loved it for the passion, the liberation, the freedom that I had. I used to go out the back where my mum and dad used to live, out the back into the fields with my little dog, little Jack Russell, just running everywhere. And the other thing that springs to mind is my scouting. I love scouting, and I loved the badges that you used to get down your arm. I used to be the scout, so I used to be the scout column. They used to take the scout book home, and I'd flick through that looking for the next badge that I wanted. And when I found it, then I'd go and ask for help from my mom, my dad, or the scout leader, of course, and they would help me to achieve it. And I guess in a way, looking back on it, I guess I was setting a foundation of setting goals and working towards them, and that came into fruition later on in my life. And when I left school was okay, but when I left school, I worked in the coal pits. The coal pits of Yorkshire as a coal miner. And I took myself to college, so I learned or trained to be a mechanical engineer. So I was a mechanical engineer, maintenance fitter, which meant that I was still working down the coal pits at the age of 18, 19 years old. But now as an engineer, I was actually helping them to fix the machines. If the machine broke down, I'd get the phone call, go down there, fix it. And I tell you what, I don't know what those guys did to those machines, but they were in a pretty bad way. They're pretty rough down there. So I had to be ingenious to work out how to fix them, because we're at the coal face now. They were waiting. So, even robbing parts from broken down machines to get my machine up and running. And then, to be honest, I got the hell out of there. I didn't really like the conditions too much, but I did like the job. And the job was very much about constantly being given problems and having to find solutions. So that's what I did. My young adult years, very much, family orientated. My brother, my sister, my mum, my dad. Lots of exercise, always outside, running still. I loved the running. That was fascinating. Did a lot of events with my father. My father, however, he got cancer in, was it 1991? And he fought it for 7 years. And I would say that he never gave in and he never stopped fighting. But eventually it did beat him. In 1998, I think it was, he passed away. And for me, I carried on with my running, because that's what I love doing.
Well, let me start with a condolence. Obviously, it's in the past, but it's part of your journey. I'm sorry that your dad went through that, and the fact that he battled it for 7 years, shows strength and resilience. But look, I'll tell you what I'm fascinated by already, and thanks for being so open there. Right, we got a whirlwind tour, right, of a couple of decades in a couple of minutes. You're the most unlikely looking coal miner I ever met.
I know, and I don't sound like one either. I sound so posh to be
Not
walking
that,
down
not that I have
the
met many,
coal
not that I've met many,
pits.
but in fairness, I would not pick you out of a lineup as a coal miner,
Know.
even in a former life. Okay, and that's meant in a very positive way. But I loved what you said about running from an early age, and we're going to get into that in a little while. But I also, in particular, fascinated by you're going through the Boy Scout manual to see what badges you're going to go for. I mean, clearly you're a consummate goal setter, right? And you set a goal and you achieve it, which, we're going to explore that in a few moments, as to what you've done phenomenally well in later life, taking those early foundations. So school, college, career as a coal miner, engineer, love that. My brother-in-law, as it happens, was one of those guys. He's just recently retired in a mine in Australia, where he was a jumbo driver. He would blow the coal the face, if you like. That was his job. He was working on these big machines. So I have a small inkling of the type of life that you would have lived back then. Okay, so we're going to fast forward because we could spend all day getting to know each other, but we're here for a very particular reason. And we're going to talk about your book and we're going to talk about the future and all that type of stuff in a few moments. But you had a near fatal car accident, and clearly it wasn't fatal, but your leg was crushed, your right leg was crushed, and it puts you in a wheelchair. And will you tell us what happened? Tell us about the accident first, if you don't mind.
So 2002 it was, driving on the outskirts of Sheffield where I live, rainy day, car skidded, nobody else on the road. I wasn't speeding. It's just a bad accident, aquaplaned, crashed into a pole, car bent in half, stuck. And everybody came to save me, police, ambulance, paramedics, fire brigade. Took them about an hour and a half to cut the car apart piece by piece, eventually reaching in, dragging me out along with what was left of my legs. Mercy dashed me to the nearest hospital, and they told me, no, they're going to do their best. They may have to amputate my right leg. Both of them were damaged. And they took me off into the operating theatre to save my legs. But to be honest, I found out later they lied to me that day, because it wasn't just my legs that they were trying to save. It was my life. I'd lost a lot of blood. I'd been through a traumatic incident. They really didn't know if I was going to come out of that operating theatre alive or dead. And that's the message that my mum received that night. She then had to relay that on to my brother and my sister, who burst into tears, not knowing if they're going to see their younger brother ever again. The consequences of this were massive. And when I woke up 8 and a half hours later, I looked down the bed. I felt terrible. I was in so much pain. I had a big metal cage around my right leg. My left leg was in a plaster cast. As around this time, the surgeon was, he was doing his rounds. He came over to me. He says, "How are you feeling?" And I said, "You know, not good. I feel terrible." He said, "Look, I understand all of that, Mr. Judge, but I just want to let you know that we did manage to save both of your legs. But with the severity of the injuries that you've sustained, there's a good chance that you may never walk again." And that was like a defining moment for me. I guess you could say the car accident itself was, but it was those words. It was those words that somebody had said to me. And yeah, the surgeon, I respect them. They do a good job. But when they say something that you don't like, for me, it's like a red rag to a bull. It builds up like an anger inside me. And I guess there's two ways I could have played it then. I could have just, it's like a fight or flight. I could have just rolled over in bed and given in and gone, okay, I guess I'll never walk again. But with the anger that had built up inside me, I felt like, I guess it's the fight, isn't it? I wanted to prove him wrong. I wanted to show him what I was capable of. He didn't really know who I was. To him, I was just a number. And I was like, well, you know, you've given me two legs. Let's see what I can do. What do I have to do to achieve? What do I have to do? And I had to do a lot. I had to grow my leg back, my right leg by 4 inches. 4 inches of bone had been knocked out, so held together with a metal cage. I had to lengthen my leg, grow the bone back. And I was like, how do I do that? How do I build my knee back? My knee on my left leg had been ripped apart. So eventually they replaced the ligaments in my knee with ligaments from a pig. Again, I don't ask too many questions on this. I just go, okay, you know, do what you need to do. What do I need to do? And it's about thinking about that all the time. I talk about it, you know, having a golden gang. And my golden gang at that time, obviously family and friends, but also surgeons, doctors, nurses, admin staff, NHS as a whole, there to put me back together and get me there. But a lot of it was me. What did I, the physio, the rehabilitation, the mindset, you know, always thinking about the goal setting, thinking about what I needed to do to stand again, to walk again. And that, you know, that was over the next 4 years of my life doing all of that.
Steve, I have watched the video that's on your YouTube channel, and we put the link in to this podcast for people to check out, and you need to check it out, folks. I didn't know what to expect before I met Steve, but I looked at the video before coming onto this call, and it's quite staggering what this man has achieved. I don't know that I would have had the fortitude, to be honest. I don't. First of all, thankfully that you're alive. That's the first thing. Yeah, you know, as you say, they lied to you. As my mother would say, God rest her, a white lie. Just, you know, we're going to try and save your leg, but in fact, we're going to save your life. So well done, then. I love the fact that you spoke about a golden team, and it includes not just family and friends, but those great people, because those great people do great work despite all the challenges. We've got the same problems here in Ireland, by the way, with our health system. That's huge challenges. But the professionals, once you get into the system here, I expect it's the same. It's the same where you are and was for you. Once you get into the system, they will look after you like you're their own. That's been my experience, and it seems to be that was the case for you. But I saw what you in your short video, and folks, you need to check it out, the work you had to do to literally lengthen your leg by turning screws in a frame. That can't have been painless.
No.
To lengthen your leg by 4 inches, and then learn to stand, and then learn to walk, and then learn to run. And then you decide you want to do triathlons.
Yeah, it was, for me, it was a natural progression. But, you know, we're going to whiz through about 7 years here. And this is, you know, as a speaker, I don't go through like the whole 20 years of my journey. You kind of skip past bits. But yeah, 4 years of rehabilitation, got into physical exercise, started with swimming because I could do that. Then eventually into cycling because I could do that. Then eventually I got into running because I had a goal. I found a goal of doing a triathlon, but not just any triathlon, a para triathlon. So triathlon for disabled people. I didn't actually know if I was disabled or not. I just thought I had really bad injuries. And when I went down to get assessed, they checked me out, gave me lots of exercise and rehabilitation and physio. And at the end, they announced me, said, "Mr. Judge, you are disabled." And I'm like, yes, this is great because now I can compete as a disabled athlete. It's about your mindset, isn't it? So now I could compete as a disabled athlete, enter the competition, happened to be very local to me, which is great. So lots of people down there. And yeah, I did lots of training getting up to that. And this is like 2009. So seven and a half years after the accident. And I was doing this triathlon, did the swim in the lake, got out, and I was leading in my category, did the bike, which was like four laps around the lake that we've just been swimming in, and that all went well. And then I was on to the run section. And this is, I've been, you know, doing a lot of training on this, but pushing myself on the run was really hard. This is when it starts draining down. You spent all your energy and you're just going like, you know, seeing red mist in a way, just going for the finish line, crossing that finish line. And not only that, I grabbed the gold medal in my category. But on that day, they said, because it's the British Championships, there's a misjudge. Congratulations, you are now British champion. Would you like to represent Great Britain? And I'm like, hell yeah, this is great. I would love to do this. And the message there is very much about there's opportunities all around us. You've got to see them. You've got to hear them. You've got to smell them. And when you do, you've got to grab hold of them with both hands. And that's what I was willing to do, you know, to say, right, I'm going to represent Great Britain. What is there, you know, the European Championships, the World Championships, what do I need to work towards? And that sent me off on another journey. And again, you know, we're talking about goal setting and setting more goals in my personal best, but also representing Great Britain and now setting goals against the rest of the world. So yeah, it really opened it up for me.
Fantastic, phenomenal story, phenomenal story. Where does the resilience come from, Steve?
Resilience. So resilience, I know a little bit about resilience now because when the pandemic hit, a lot of people were talking about this buzzword resilience. I went, oh, I know what that is because I've been through my journey. So I managed to get it out of my head and put it into some kind of a graph and a presentation, which is really good. So where did it come from for me? I think everybody's got resilience. Everybody has. But I think when for me, when something happened massive in my life, you pull all your resources together, everything that you've been through in your life, everything that you go into survival mode. And that's what I did. So when I had the car accident, when I was in hospital, I gathered in everything that I'd been through. So obviously I'd had running injuries before and I'd done physio. So I brought that in. Obviously in scouting, I'd had the goal setting and working towards them. So I brought that in. And you bring everything in to help you move on. And resilience is one of those things. Resilience is something that you can grow. So we've all got it. And resilience is, you know, basically understanding what it is that you will go through a little bit of a denial, as in surely this can't be happening to me, but then you go through the anger, and it's about accepting that you're going through this. So accept the anger, accept being angry, but use that anger. So that's good. Sharing, you know, share that what you're going through. You need to get it out of your system. You can't contain it because it will just explode in the wrong way. So you share it by talking to people, by watching videos, by writing poetry, listening to music, whatever you need to do, write a journal, but somehow share what you're going through. Whatever you do, you will still go through rock bottom. And that's, you know, there's nothing you can do about that. But how long you stay in rock bottom, that really low part, even depression, depends on how you've controlled the anger and the sharing before that. Because the good stuff is coming. So the good stuff, the bit after that is acceptance. Accepting the situation that you're in. Because once you accept the situation you're in, your serotonin kicks in and you can start thinking clearly and you can start taking action. And this is the best bit. You take action, you do something, your dopamine gets released, you feel good about it, you take more action. And it's kind of like a curve. You drag down and you get to rock bottom and then you go back out by acceptance, taking action and moving on forward. And this is what I did throughout my journey, you know, accepting you are in a low place and, you know, having a bit of a sulk about it, but then saying, right, so this is the situation. What can we do about it? And that's the
That's
thing, you
the
know,
thing.
what more can I do? What more can I do? What more can I do to lift myself up?
Would you accept from me, Steve, that not everybody would respond in the way you responded to that situation?
I have to accept it from you, but I'm kind of in denial. And I find this really frustrating because there are, you're right, there's people out there and there's people that say, I don't think I could have done what you did, Steve. And I think, well, you weren't in my situation. When somebody says you may never walk again, surely that flicks a switch. Surely you go, well, I want to stand again. I want to walk again. What do I have to do? But I'm afraid you're right, Colin. There's people out there will go, oh, okay, I'll just give in then. And it's, I guess it is that word, isn't it? They just give in. And I don't really understand that. So when I talk about setting goals and working towards them, I am very passionate about that person finding the right goal for them because I do understand that everybody's different. Some people do like, you know, goals in academics or sport or relationships or environment. They want a car or a house and other people, everybody's different. So I say, well, find the right goal that you want and then we can talk about it. But surely if they found the right goal, I always think that health is quite a big one. You know, you want to stay alive, you want to walk, talk, and all of those good things. But yeah, I think if you find that goal, then you should work towards it, and it shouldn't be a problem. But still, as there's people out there with bad health issues, they know what they've got to do, and they're not doing it. And it blows me away. I don't really know what to say to people like that.
Yeah, it's a really interesting conversation to have, because we both know people, if dare I say it, in both ends of the continuum, right? Here, people who would, without question, give up and say, "Poor me, this universe has dealt me a lousy hand, and I'm going to lie down under it and suck my thumb, and have a pity party for the rest of my life and drag everybody around me." You spoke about your golden gang, their golden gang, into that same pity party, and I feel sorry for them. I can't. I haven't experienced what you've experienced, okay, and I haven't experienced what somebody else who's listening to this may have experienced. We all are on our own journeys. However, I love what you say about it's important that people find what's important to them, not what's important to Steve Judge or Colm O'Brien in relation to them. What's important to them? I talk in my work about the four pillars that I believe are important to have a fully formed life: our health, our wealth, our relationships, and our spirit. And health is fairly obvious. Wealth is not necessarily about getting rich, but it's about having enough or being content with what we have. Relationships, clearly important, your golden gang, your family, you refer to your brother, sister, your mother, and of course your dad, your late dad. And we've got friends and all sorts of people and work colleagues. And then our spirit is, and it's indomitable, but the word in you, right? I don't think there's much that would keep Steve Judge down. But we need to have a relationship with ourselves that we're comfortable with, and or a higher power. That's a personal choice. But we absolutely need to be comfortable with who we are as individuals. And it strikes me, Steve, that you're living your mission. And if I take a universal view of this, right, Colm O'Brien's view of the universal view of this, it's that the universe needed, for some strange reason, Steve Judge to go through what Steve Judge went through to do what Steve Judge does today, right? And help people on their journeys. Is that a fair comment?
It's one of those things of you can't control what happens to you, but you can control how you react to what happens to you. And this is how I'm reacting. This is what's driving me forward. I think I've still got in the back of my mind that I don't want the accident to have a detrimental effect on my life. And it's not about the standing and the walking. It's not about the gold medals that I've achieved. It's about, at the end of the day, it's about helping other people. If I can help thousands, if not millions of people to achieve their goals, to be happy, fulfillment in life, then maybe one day I'll say, I'm glad that accident happened. I'm glad I nearly lost my life. I'm glad I'm in pain every single day of my life, because look at what I've done to other people's lives. Now, I'm not there yet, and that's not a bad thing. That means it's ongoing. It's an ongoing mission, because then I don't stop. But yeah, I think the thing is, with people fulfilling their life in whatever way that is, they do have reasons why they don't think they can do it, or they don't know how to do it. And that's what frustrates me, because I know what the answers are. I know how to help them, and it's about getting it out there. And that makes me impatient. And so I'm trying to find the best ways of doing it so that I can help them, empower them, motivate them, inspire them, give them the tools. And that brings me to becoming a professional speaker. I can speak to hundreds, thousands of people all at once, but I need more than that. Then it goes on to, the books that I've written. So the tools are in that so that they can use that and they can do it. Or I can do the workshop, or I can do an online workshop, or maybe something else, or something else. I'm always thinking, what more can I do to help other people so that they can enjoy the happiness and fulfillment of their life? So yeah, you're right. It is an ongoing mission.
It clearly is, but I'll also posit to you that you've already changed the world, right? Because you've changed my world by simply being here. I know something now that I didn't know before we started having a conversation. I'm more motivated today to do better at what I do today. So even by changing, you're talking about helping hundreds, thousands, and indeed millions of people over time. And fingers crossed that that will happen if that's what the universe requires of you. But by changing one person's life, you change the world. So congratulations, well done, gold medal for you on that point. Where your book Gold, speaking of gold medal, your book Gold, GOLD. I'm fascinated by the first quote. You start the book by saying, "Hell is getting to the end of your days and meeting the person that you could have become." Why did you start with that? Why is that so?
Yes, yeah. So I told this quote by my business coach, Rob Pickering, and he told me this quote. He says, "Hell on earth is getting to the end of your days and meeting the person that you could have become." And I thought about it, and I said, "Rob, I don't get it." He says, "What?" I said, "I don't get it. When I get to the end of my days, the person that I could have become will be the waste of space, the loser, the person that didn't do stuff, they didn't get off their ass, they just watched Netflix, ate too much, and drank too much, and I don't want to be that. That's not hell on earth. I'd be burnt out in a way, in a good way. I'd have done as much as I could. I would live my life with no regrets." And he said to me, he says, "Steve, I get that, but that's you. That's not most people." And I said, "Again, I don't understand. What do you mean?" He says, "Most people will get to the end of their days." And you can ask people. Most people say, yeah, I get that quote. I get it. I will get to the end of my days and I will have regrets about the things I haven't done. I know being in a dead-end job, not spending enough time with my kids and my family, not being fit, not being healthy." And I said, "Whoa, whoa, whoa. So your plan is to get to the end of your days and have regrets. That doesn't sound like a plan. You're almost having, regrets every single day, week, month, year, till you die, and then go, I regret my life." And it's maybe I'm exaggerating a bit, but that's how generally 80% of the people, the population, do stuff. And I'm in the section that the 20% where we don't do that. And it blows my mind. And that's why I said, I've got to write a book about this. And it's very much about, everything that I'm thinking about, everything that I've been through, that I haven't just rolled over in bed and just gone, I give in. I'm the one that says, right, I don't want to have any regrets. And I haven't achieved everything in my life. But when I haven't achieved it, I've looked back and gone, well, no regrets. I did as much as I could. We can't be successful and achieve every single goal that we set out there, but we can get damn near clear. And that's the thing. And getting to the end of your life and going, well, I'm not a millionaire. I'm not an astronaut. I'm not. There's lots of things I didn't do, but oh my goodness, no regrets. I've done my best. And that's the thing, and I say, do your best. It's not about trying. What's that famous Yoda quote? It's, do or do not. We do not try. So it's about, doing it rather than, not just trying it. If you're going to try it, that's not going to work because it's just not going to happen. So it's about living your life with no regrets, getting to the end of your days.
I love it. I love it. I love it. The Yoda, I quote him regularly. There is no try. Do or do not. There is no try. And it's just it's so true. Dead end job for having somebody having a dead end job. I heard a phrase years ago. Do you really have 25 years experience, or do you have 1 year's experience repeated 25 times? And that's that's fairly hard hitting if you think about it. The only other thing I'll take. A question, if I may, is the 80-20 thing. Regrettably, I think the numbers are worse. I think it's probably 90-10 or 95-5, unfortunately. A lot of it, I think, Steve, which is where you come in to play, I believe, a lot of it comes down to people not knowing. Not knowing. Warren Buffett calls it the Ovarian lottery. We get thrown into a family situation completely beyond our control. Okay. And as a result of that, we're in a particular situation beyond our control, not of our making. And our formative years are formed in that, which is why I was interested in bringing us all the way back in the early part of this conversation to your early childhood. You have extraordinary resilience. And you had clearly a nurturing environment, which allowed you said you sat down with your parents and you sat down with your scout leader to figure out how to achieve those goals. Unfortunately, many people don't have that type of nurturing background. Okay. And it's beyond their control, it's beyond our control, yours and mine, right? So what's important about something like this is that this message finds its way to somebody, okay? Somebody, somehow, and it just flicks a light switch. And I talk about this, what I call the universal bump here. Somebody's born into a situation here and they're predestined because of their lineage, because of where they're born, is to end up there. Okay. They come and they meet a Steve Judge in their life, and Steve says, "Well, you can actually be anything you want." What? Nobody ever told me that. And it's a little bump, right? And it nudges them. And instead of them ending up there 25 years later because they've made some changes, they end up over here. Does that make sense? This is what I call 100-year work, Steve. Their kids then start here, not here, right? Their grandkids start out there, and so on and so forth. And that's 100-year work. So you will affect people you already have. Okay, you have already engaged in 100-year work. You've changed the world for by 2123 will be different to 2023 because somebody met Steve Judge. Okay.
Yeah.
Absolutely confident of that. So well done, job done. Just keep doing more of it. I'm
keep
with
doing
you.
it. And
Just
that's
keep
the thing,
doing
what
it.
more can I do? What
No,
more can I do?
just do more. Just do more. That's it. Just do more of it.
It's fascinating. What you were talking about there, Colin, was very much like similar to the beta region paradox. Have you heard of the beta region paradox?
No.
Okay, so I'll try and explain it. So if you've got to walk a mile, you've got to go for a mile, you'll probably walk it because it's only a mile. But if someone says actually you've got to go 2 miles, you go, oh, I'm not going to walk it, I'm going to take the car. And you'll actually get to 2 miles quicker than you would have walked 1 mile. Okay, it's getting to that bit where you're pushed out of your comfort zone too much and it flicks a switch. And what I want to be is I want to be that switch. I want people to come in, hear me speak and say, do you know what? I'm okay in my job. It's not brilliant, but it's okay. And I will say something that will flick the switch and say, do you know what? Steve's right. You know, I am in that job. I'm not happy or that relationship or I'm not earning enough money or whatever. You know, talking about your four pillars, you know, my spiritual side is not quite good enough. And it's a case of if it's good, it's good. That's fine. If it's okay, that's not good. And if it's bad, that's good. Because if it's really bad, then you're going to do something about it. And I'm going to be that change. I'm going to be the achievement catalyst that people are going to hear me and make that change. And how I'm going to do that various ways in my business. But also, I've gone back to scouting now. I'm now a Cub Scout leader. I'm also the president of Derbyshire Scouts. I was doing a session last night. So now I can speak to a wider range of people, the new generation, the kids, and maybe they haven't got parents that are supportive, but I can do that as a Cub Scout leader. I've got massive goals for that. You know, even my own scout badge I'm going to design and launch at some point. So it's all exciting stuff. Oh, can't hear you. You're on silent.
Sorry, I was saying there's a first. That's fantastic. Your own scout badge. Well
Yes.
done. Congratulations. Look, big dreams, big goals, big dreams,
Always.
big vision, and well done you. And I'm delighted to hear you say that you're involved with the younger kids because we're back to that Ovarian lottery. We don't know what goes on behind closed doors. Regrettably, a lot of pain out there, a lot of sadness out there, a lot of madness out there. And but again, I go back to it. Somebody meets a Steve Judge in their life, has this little universal bump. And over time, that has such a huge difference. It's not funny. I'm conscious of time, right? Gold, GOLD. What does it stand for?
So gold, I talked about achieving your gold. I talked about gold medals and the gold in your life. And it's only when I started writing my book, I thought of an acronym for gold. And gold for me is your goal, your opportunity, your love, and your dream. What is your gold? What is that thing that you really want? What is that thing that you're passionate about? What is that thing that would get you out of bed at 5:30 in the morning? What is that thing that you're maybe a little bit embarrassed about talking to other people about, but inside you're really excited about it? What is that thing that you really want? What is your gold? What is your goal, your opportunity, your love, and your dream? And finding that acronym for me has really helped me to focus on, you know, what is your gold? And I can help you find gold, achieve gold. And it's not easy because when you talk about gold, it's a bit like having a map, you need a golden map to find the gold, like a treasure map in a way. And I love things like that. So then you need a golden compass. And I've talked about, you know, the five winning ways. And those are your golden vision that you need, like a telescope. You need your golden soul, you know, your spirit as to why you want it. Your golden gear is to, you know, how do you do that? What more can I do? What more can I do? What more can I do? Of course, you need a golden gang because you can't do this thing alone. So who's in your gang? And more importantly, who do you want in your gang in the future? Think about who you'd love to have, what gurus you'd like to help you, what people you know can help you and support you. And the last one is your golden hour. When do you want this by? And think big as well. Think in the next 5 years, 10 years, and then bring it back. Say, okay, in 5 years' time, I want this. So where do I need to be in 4 years, 3 years, 2 years? By the end of this year, where do I need to be? End of this month, week, day, this hour, what am I going to do this hour that will take me to my gold in 5 years' time? So it all really fits really nicely. And writing the book about that was fascinating. Again, getting it out of my head, putting it in the book was great because now it's in the book. Now I can give it to other people, share it with other people, helping them to achieve their gold. That will turn into a workshop, which it is, but also an online workshop, which I can then go global with it. And for people that put barriers in the way, like, well, I haven't got time or I can't afford it. I said, well, first of all, you know, there's no time limit. You can do whenever you want. You can choose that. But also the money side of it, if they're really struggling, I can now give it away for free if it's an online course. So I'm trying to remove other people's barriers, which people always put in there. They always lean on excuses. So if I can take some of those excuses away, again, that makes me really happy so that I can help them.
Look, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. I'm going to adopt you as part of my golden gang, if I may.
Yeah,
I'm not even
lovely.
Asking permission. I'm stating
Let's do it.
I'm delighted to have had this opportunity to talk with you today, Steve. Steve, we met at the PSA annual conference in Birmingham some time back, and great to be able to connect here. And thanks for sharing the stuff that you did, and we'll put links in here. In fact, there's a question for you. What's the web address? How can people find you?
Dead easy. www.steve-judge.co.uk. But if you just Google Steve Judge, you should be able to find me. Social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter or X, Instagram, my website, YouTube as well. Seriously, if you want to get in contact with me, there are no excuses. So do that. And I would love to, if I can help anybody, that's what I'm here for. So if you've got a question that you want to ask me, just reach out.
I love it. And there are two words that you used in the last few moments that really resonated with me. One is the L in gold, which is love. And you then brought in the word soul into the whole thing. And I really like that. I think there's not enough love in the world. There's not enough soul work in the world. The world's gone to pot in many instances, which is largely down to greed and all the rest of it. We don't have time to go there today. So it's nice to hear somebody like you, Steve, bring it back to basics. And it's just been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for taking the time to join me for this Coffee with Colin podcast. And we'll put it out there and see where it goes. Ladies and gentlemen, Stephen Judge.
Thank you very much.